Frankie.
And that's Lummis. That's all right. Yeah. It's like it's La Mesa, not La Mesa, and so forth and so on. Yeah. All right. Thanks for inviting me to this round two of this small seed discussion. We had a similar session. We had the same session in, I guess it was Dallas. Yeah, 2 years ago, and Wes and Richard and I were part of that group at that time as well. So what I want to talk about first is I'd like to pick up where Richard left off on the small seed issue in the gins, and primarily at the gin stand. I'm in my 45th year in this industry, and to some, yes, I'm still standing up, and I'm still not retired, so I'm still around. But this is nothing new. We've been seeing seed in link cleaners going way back, 30, maybe even 40 years. But what we typically saw in there were seeds that were large enough to where they would be actually planted into the link cleaner saw because they had difficulty clearing the feed plate. The small seed we see now, it you don't see it planted on the link cleaner saw. It's in the moats or it's on the floor. Also, the air jet link cleaner was a great equalizer. I think there was a lot going on that none of us really were, maybe we were aware of it. But when we were still getting 800 pounds of seed plus per bale, it really wasn't, it wasn't a big issue. It wasn't a big deal. We started getting down in the lower numbers. It became more of an issue naturally. And then Richard threw up the flag about 3 or 4 years ago. And if any of you know Richard, he's an extremely intelligent man. He's very tenacious and impatient as hell. And so, you should know that better than anybody. And frankly, a lot of what we've worked on since and used, it came from Richard. Richard wasn't going to wait for us to come up with some sort of fix or whatever. He wanted us to go up there and see what he had done already. Which was very impressive, it opened our eyes. We already knew about the small seed; it was happening, but the amount of loss, and when you put it into dollars, Richard did all the math work. He knew what he knew. He was losing money. He's a producer and he's a ginner, and he was in dire straits. So we worked with Richard, and actually, through a couple of iterations, came up with some fixes that it didn't solve it completely. And I don't know if we'll ever get to that because of the way things are changing and progressing. But it did bring this to the forefront. It got everybody's attention. So now I think I'm a little bit disappointed in the fact that 2 years ago we had this same discussion and nothing is happening. 20 years ago we had discussions about this and nothing has happened. The process, I wasn't aware of it until Jane brought it up in her presentation earlier. I know it takes years to get these varieties out, and I know all the processes that you have to go through. I just don't know how we get the word back to the breeders and get them involved on the front end, looking at the post-processing implications or the post-harvest implications of these seed. I mean, I'm an engineer, design engineer, and I know that you establish a majority of the cost and everything on a design in the very beginning of the whole process. And you fix things to where it's very difficult to go back and change them. So somehow, and I don't know how, it's this communication issue, but I don't know, are there any breeders in this audience right now? Are you lost? somehow we need to bridge this gap. We need to have more involvement because we need to do something. Right now what we're doing are is more Band-Aid fixes to an issue. And I'm not sure how much smaller we can go. And for a machinery manufacturer or a gin manufacturer who manufactures solid gins, and this has implications with roller gins as well, but the solid gin is predicated, the design of that gin is predicated on a substantial seed, a hardy seed, because what goes on inside that gin stand is extremely violent. And it's utter chaos in there. So the size of the seed makes a difference, but it so does the seed coat, the strength of the seed coat. Because, this saw is pulling that lint through there, and it's running that seed up against the ribs, and it's just a violent operation. This slide is one I used in Dallas at that presentation. And what you're, because there's probably met some people here that aren't familiar with the saw gin, but what you're looking at is a graphical cross-section of a typical seed roll in a saw gin. Now, this could also represent the seed roll in Henry Ogden Holmes' gin that he designed back in the 1790s. It's the same principle. It hasn't changed. All we're doing now is we're putting more material through it. We're doing it faster. We're putting more horsepower on the saws. But the process is the same. Now, back then, I'm sure they had a pretty vigorous big seed. And I know when we had 800 pounds of seed per bale, we could do a pretty good job, but we had problems with seed coats because you still get weak seed coats regardless of the size of the seed. But this right here has not changed appreciably in the last 200 years. So we're doing the same thing, but what we are doing, like I said, is we're ginning faster and we're putting more horsepower and we're also putting more saws so we can get those volumes through there in the same per foot than what we used to do. There we go. There's a few things specific about that seed roll geometry that you saw. It's not, the only fluke was the very first one that Henry Holmes came up with, because I don't know how he predicted that was actually going to happen and he was going to have a continuous process. Maybe he did, maybe it was luck. But the fact that it's a continuous process, it makes it very unique in any of the machines that are used in these types of processes today. But the design of the initial design of that geometry is very difficult to really get your arms around. And when you start increasing the throughput, it's even more difficult. I think I've mentioned this before when I was involved in the design of the 161 at Continental. We had 32 different seed roll configurations before we actually hit on the correct one. So it's not something that's easy to do. And once you get there, that's it. We don't have a different gin stand for different varieties. We don't have a different gin stand for different regions, cotton growing areas. We don't have a different gin stand for international versus domestic. It's all the same. And typically, all the parameters, the speed, the power, it's all the same. So the only real variable in there are either environmental, moisture, trash content, variety. Those are the different, but the gin stands are all the same. And that's true for all of us. We can't change the designs of gyms with, there's no way in the world we could do that. We'd have to have a new design every year. And back to the small seed, implications of the small seed, we tried tweaking the geometry to see what we can do about the seed issue. When you start messing with that, there's all kinds of implications, and most of them bad. So we're real reluctant to do anything in there. Once we hit on that design, we would like to stay there. But we have tried to close up any potential gaps, areas where you can lose seed, and we've had success doing that. But it's been a slow process, a lot of experimentation, and again, we've had successes and we've had failures. Now, something about the gin roll, the seed roll itself, and if any of you have ever, seen a gin stand, especially when a gin stand is first put in, it has no seed roll, and you see the cotton coming down the apron. Typically, you would see seed coming out of the bottom of the gin, but you don't, and you won't see any coming out of the bottom of the gin. It's all in that seed roll, and it's going to stay in that seed roll until the lint is actually removed from the seed, but it's still going to stay in the center of that seed roll until you get up to a density to where that seed wants to migrate, and basically the seed roll is self-purging. And its density is really what does that. It gets to that density. Without the lint on there, the seed actually migrates out to the bottom of the seed roll. So the density makes a difference. And there are ranges where you reach a steady state. Okay? So that means the material coming in, the material going out is steady. It continues to go that, you know, in that way. Now, I mentioned the movement of the finished seed. Well, the seed actually goes to the center, and then that gin seed has to force its way out through the edge of the bottom of the seed roll. So there's a whole lot going on in there, and when you start doing that and you start having more sols per foot, you start getting a lot of forces in there, and with the smaller seed and these additional forces, that seed is going to look for a place to go. And so it's much more difficult to actually hold and keep that seed from going through the ribs than it would have been, say, with less horsepower, less speed. But, you know, we're all about speed. We're all about volume. And that's the direction that we're going with this equipment. So it's a difficult thing from a design standpoint to stay ahead of all these different potential variables in there, and then have to deal with the seed size as well. I don't know what you mentioned, Jane, earlier in your speech. You say that the middle or whatever that index is. I don't know what that is. You know, I just know that the red was it the no
green.
Yeah, the green, yeah, but I'm just saying the red's not good.
Okay.
You know, and the yellow's not good, right? All right. Well, we're seeing way too much red and yellow is my opinion. And it makes a challenge for an engineer, because we love challenges. This one's getting a little bit tiring. So you know, I think getting back to the communication issue, we need to figure out a way that we can go ahead and get back to this green and get away from that yellow and red. I think it'd do all of us a lot of good. So that's really all I got to talk about at this point. I'll take questions with the rest. Thanks.
Hopefully not too awkward.
I'm tied
up on the podium.
Yeah, I'll let you do that.
I guess the best way to do this is try to, I think I'm going to be able to do this, is I just ask folks, thanks again to all of our speakers, but if folks have questions from any of our speakers, and Jane is here as well, so we'll just open it up for questions. David Blakemore.
Robert, on the lenders being fewer now than it was
Yes, sir.
Do you think that's a small seed, or you think that's the old equipment of the 141 that we had would leave a big tag on the seed?
Right. We're going to put in some new equipment, and we'll find out. But it takes, if you're going to crush 1,000 tons a day, to come out on the back end through the meal and oil side, if you want 1,000 tons a day crush there, you almost have to do 1,100 to 1,200 pounds through the front end because of so much loss that we see. Everybody's equipment's pretty old. We're going to be, next year at this time, we'll have brand new Linn equipment in. We'll see if that makes a difference, but I can't answer that question because ours is 35 years old, and I would imagine some of the other people out there that are using, there's only 8 oil mills left, and most of it's 20 plus years old, so it could be equipment, but we do have a loss. We have to put more throughput through the front to get it out the back.
I was talking about the equipment that we're using.
Oh, that you're using. Okay, I'm sorry. The percentage of the lint left on the seed is it's going down. A lot of it is, yes. So, you know, that does probably make a little difference on what we get on our lint yield. I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question. So, yeah, you're right. We're getting the seed in at 10 to 11, maybe. What are you guys leaving on the seed? Do you know how much fiber you're leaving on?
We used to be around the 15%, I think, in the soft ginning on the Continentals. Now we're probably closer to 9 or 10.
Right. I think it averages about 10 or 11 for us. We get it down to about 4. So, you know, if the older days we had more coming in, then we were able to get more off of it.
I think from my perspective, as we've seen this seed size shrink, we've seen the nutrient content of that seed shrink also. I think that they're tied together. So if we don't get away from where we're at today and get that seed back to where it was 5-10 years ago, especially if nutritionists actually start doing the testing of this product, which they're testing other ingredients, I think it's only a matter of time that they start testing cottonseed as well. I really think that we're going to see some challenges to continue to utilize cottonseed in dairy rations unless it gets really, really cheap, and we really don't want that. We want as much seed as we possibly can get, and we want it at a level which is going to make sense to growers and ginners to want to continue to do that. So.
Other questions? Can we throw Jane in with the group?
Sure.
Absolutely.
I thought that was the plan anyway.
Yeah.
did I understand correctly in your presentation that from a breeding standpoint, seed size doesn't really come into bear in your decision making until later in your selection process? And then the other thing I'm thinking about here is there's so much going on right now in terms of improving our ability to phenotype. Is there something missing from an engineering standpoint, a tool that could help you in those earlier stages to get the information that might relate to the problems that these gentlemen have been talking about?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question, and one we have discussed before, because what we have available to us now in seed size is not a perfect thing. It's, you know, sitting there and counting out 100 seed and weighing it, so it's really hard to do when you have thousands and thousands of lines and not really practical on an individual plant standpoint. But if you had an image analysis that was quick and could distinguish between, you know, the seed that could be used at that stage, yeah, that'd be cool. My graduate student back there is going.
Would that need to be on clean seed, or could you do it on fuzzy seed?
It would be best on fuzzy seed, but it could also be done on clean seed, because most of those individual plant selections, you know, we take those lint percent measurements, you know, at the fuzzy seed stage, but all of that seed is diluted as well before we can replant it back into a progeny row, so it could be either one. But we really like to make decisions that eliminate things before we have to delint and plant them, just from a practical standpoint.
Jimmy, I hate to even ask this question,
but Jimmy,
it's something we're going to be talking about, I guess, by Bill James, how far we are off from becoming large amounts of eucalyptus cotton seed, and how we're going to have to change a lot of things we do in our gym to separation.
There's a lot of things that are going on to that decision, and you're absolutely right. Is if this technology comes on board, it's going to have to really be initially handled as a separate system, I think. Cater maybe can answer that better than I can, but you're absolutely right that that's a completely different. How long are we off? I think there's going to be at least, if someone today were to be really interested and ramp that up, it would be at least 5 years. Or three to cater. So we can take an average and say four.
No. There you go.
Oh, you know, I thought you said three. No, he does it five. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
An average five. Any other questions? Questions from the audience?
In terms of the dinning process, has the fiber strength and length changed that, and the dynamics of removing that fiber from the seed?
You're talking about attachment forces?
Yeah, is that a consideration in the...
Now that's a breeder question. Attachment forces.
Hi, David. No.
I can tell you the implication.
Yeah.
I've got a
and also seed coat fragments.
We've seen some of these newer varieties actually move up into the production, and the gins have gone down with some of these newer varieties. And it's difficult to explain, but I mean, you know, you and Richard both can have seen it, I'm sure. One of the questions I had when I presented it as a bit of a challenge for the research group is, you know, what's the implications of the frictional forces between the seeds in the seed roll? If that seed count goes up, does that have an impact on, how does that impact the power that's required to actually make this roll turn or actually do the ginning process? So does that do it? The other is the attachment force with these different varieties, which would have a direct, you would think would have a direct correlation on that, on the power demand, but...
correlated with like length and strength of the fiber, but there is something, and there is an instrument you can measure. If you really have a problem in your breeding program with seed force attachment, as we did in one of the breeding programs I used to manage, there's to try to eliminate those genotypes that have that, there is a measurement that you can use that measures seed force attachment, but it doesn't really correlate with actual fiber length and strength.
Dusty had a question.
Yeah, my question, Jane, was you're talking about the length percent being something that is selected early.
Yes.
In the process. Where 80, but you also talked about 84% or something along those lines has more to do with the number of bowls per acre.
Yeah, number of seeds per acre, not the size of the seeds.
So I assume that the lint percent is becoming a proxy for yield early on in that, but it doesn't really reflect it.
That's correct.
So I've got a personal project that I'm going to ban turnout from the English language.
Well, I work in the stripper harvested area, so I use turnout completely different than lint percent. So,
I guess what I'm trying to get my arms around is how do we communicate that the seed size is important to the ginning industry and the producers without really trying to turn this whole thing about yield or lint percent and turnout on its head. That's what this whole panel is about, and that's what we've been trying to struggle with. How do we help get this message back up the line early enough in the selection process?
I don't know too many better ways to do it than this panel discussion in this venue. There were several commercial breeders in here listening to me earlier. They're gone, but it is just a communication. Hey, John. Cool. But you know, it's something I teach as far as that lint percent thing is. It's like the really easy measurement we can have. It's the closest correlation that we can have. It's the only thing we can do early. I just tell them if you get really really high, make sure you know go back and look at your seed index, and sure enough, if you get really really low. You know, you're going to limit your potential. So it's just a matter of trying to not rely so much on lint percent and not try to convince people that lint percent is equivalent to yield. It is not.
This is a perfect opportunity for me to tell the story that I've told several times during this meeting, but I had a general, said he was having a discussion with a producer, and he said, okay, Mr. Producer, I've got one variety here that produces 1,200 pounds of lint, and I can guarantee it, it's got a 45% turnout. I've got another variety here, it'll make 1,200 pounds of lint guaranteed, and it's got 35% turnout. And he said, which one would you choose? And he said, of course, the 45% turnout. And I think that's one of the things we're dealing with here, that larger turnout number, no matter what the yield is what seems to matter sometimes. So anyway, that's my story. Any other questions?
There's one more technical question for the ginning and the processing. Robert, how important is the variability in seed size? You know, one of the investments that Ed's making is trying to get highly uniform harvests of pop. So the fiber is uniform, the seed is uniform, but you can end up with big loads of a very uniform large seed, but also some big loads of very small seed, but very uniform. Is uniformity an issue of the seed size in the gin and in the process?
Oh, is that for me? I don't think the gin can tell any difference what size it is. It's I can't say that you can gin any faster maybe because the seed is larger. I know that there is varieties that come in that have more lint on the seed, and you can be sitting there ginning 55 bales an hour, say at my plant, and all of a sudden you'll go to 59 or 62 or something. And only thing I know is just that it's a better product, and that's what your producer's looking for. And my theory on that is that that variety is just not producing a seed. And like Harrison's little comment of his situation with the what he just got through saying about the producer wanting a higher turnout. There, the advantages, there's several advantages for him there that we don't think about. And these breeders really still are concentrating on the producer because they've got to sell seed. And they don't ask the gins what we need normally. So maybe getting off the point just a little bit, but I do not see any difference in larger seed and smaller seed being ginned at the same time. I can't see it and don't know a difference. And we don't have the parameters on the gin that tell us the difference probably.
For the processor though, you know, I'm with Jane. Medium would be great if we had something consistent, but we have 55 member gins for 200 mile radius of Lubbock, Texas. Seed comes in, it all goes in the same pile. And so more uniformity would be great because we wouldn't have to keep adjusting our equipment in order to try to maximize our crush. We don't want the waste, we want the products. Yes, we have to make adjustments on the solid. We have to make it with the huller bars and everything else as we go into the hull room just to kind of get to different sizes.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Maybe we won't have to have this session anymore. Tim Price has a question.
Well, just a comment. I think maybe it's challenge promotion, but really it's not. It's our annual meeting, February the 28th in Memphis, to welcome anyone, and we're having much of the same discussion because I think it's so important to keep the discussion going and invite in both extension specialists as well as seabreeders to do that. So you're all welcome to come to that in the Farm Again Show, but that meeting will be somewhat of a repeat.
And in my comments, I will tell you this, the technology next customer is Medgear. And yesterday, they adopted a recommendation that we will be in contact with breeders and seed companies to let them know how important of an issue this is to the ginning industry and the rest of the industry. Because to Robert's comment about the producers, we've got to keep them in business. The ginning is a part, a component of the harvest. They do not have a marketable product until we send the cotton to the gin and we can. Another point is that the cotton seed, and with these bags of cotton seed, that's one of the reasons this is more of an important issue. But the cotton seed value has a direct impact on that producer's bottom line as well. In fact, if you look at the amount of dollars that come off of an acre of cotton, which is cracked, it's pretty considerable. And that's something that we've got to remember. That also helps those producers stay in business. Cotton seed value covers the cost of the producer. But in many cases, it also is a dollar amount that goes back to that producer based on that cotton seed as well. So we need to keep that in mind as well. Any other questions or comments?
I'd just like to say that it would be, I think there's some value if you put together every second on the panel, the things that are desired. That doesn't mean they're ever going to come to fruition, but if every segment of the industry did this, the top 10 things you want, then I think that would be very helpful to the companies like Bayer and Delta.
The National Cotton Council, of course, Research and Education Subcommittee has a policy statement now. It references a 1994 meeting where we brought all of the segments together. And we had that discussion. There were like 10 items that they pointed out that they needed to focus on. What's interesting, one of those was to establish a seed index of 10 is the minimum seed size.
Yeah.
And you see where we kind of blown through that.
24 years ago.
So I suspect that we will be doing that again. We probably will, we'll have a refocus, so to speak, but I'm hoping that we do just that. We develop, this is what the industry needs now. This is what it was in 1994. And by the way, we have some of those items that were in that list we have achieved. One of them was the gospel free, ultra-low gospel, where you had it in the rest of the plant line. But there were also some nutritive values information in there that needs to be, we need to revisit that as well. So I suspect that we will be doing some of that. Any other questions?
Sure. And this is probably for James Smith. Yesterday in Rob's presentation, the factor of seed coats was, I think, the second largest discount in the fiber side of it. And we don't think we have any merchants here today, but is that relationship of seed coat fragments a seed coat size issue, or is it a genetic function of the seed itself, no matter what size it is?
John's got my back over there behind you, nodding yes. So, and Erica Kay was actually in here earlier as well. The seed coat fragment is a terrible contaminant for a spinner.
Yeah.
And it can be related to seed size, but also what we talked about before, seed coat strength. Unfortunately, Mike Dowd was not here. The very first presentation scheduled for today would have been great to answer that question. But it is a component as far as the seed size and the pressures it takes in processing. But it's not the only one. Seed size is not the only factor in generating seed coat fragments.
Jane, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't we have a variety that actually made it to the marketplace that actually had a fairly significant seed size but was dirt in about a year?
Yeah. He's calling me out because when I first started giving this presentation, I'd start out with some stories. Here's some cool stories about seed size or seed issues that you know, actually happened. And some of the varieties were pulled and some of them went forward. And then there was a reporter there. And he tried to write a story of me talking about other people's varieties, and I tell him I can't do that as a public breeder now. But yes, there are a lot of really interesting stories that got all the way to the market, sometimes in the market. I had a grower on the High Plains ask me, "Hey, Jane, whatever happened to da-da-da-da-da-da-da? It was really a nice variety." And I said, "Well," and what I didn't tell him is, you know, we pulled it after a year. We were able to because it hadn't gotten popular, didn't have a lot of, you know, acres and market share, and it was a problem, and we could pull it back.
One of the issues is that by the time we get used to one variety, there's already a change.
Yeah.
It seems like when I was a lot younger and didn't have gray hair, we had, you know, a few Delta Fine varieties and some Stonewall varieties, and now we've got all of these varieties. It seems like they change so rapidly now.
I didn't speak about that except for that one slide showing the transitions happen very, very rapidly, but a lot of people talk about it's an issue. We know that variety life shelf is about 3 years. That's why I cringe to think, you know, somebody's suggesting we change the equipment when varieties change so very fast. And that's not feasible or practical in a lot of ways unless we just set on one side size of seed, but that's not going to happen. So, it's a concern. It's one of the issues in variety considerations.
It would have been nice to have maintained that no less than 10 seed index. So, yeah.
Well, you know, people talk a lot about this yield and the seed index, and I just have to say that as a commercial, when I introduced what is still one of the highest yielding varieties on the High Plains, in our slides up there is the one with the biggest seed index. So I call me, you know, cynical.
Any other questions? This was a very good session, and I want to thank our panel members. Like Joe?
Yeah, I've got one comment. And it just kind of ties back into the 94, what you're talking about, but that was when the previous Jenner's handbook was published, and at that time, 800 pounds per bell was the number that we were using. We just recently went through the new you were one of the co-authors with me along on, with some others on the new seed handling generator's handbook. It's in the Journal of Cotton Sciences. But that number's 700 now. It's not 800. And I worry that maybe we were still too ambitious with 700, but we had to arrive, we had to come up with some number, because all the calcs, everything that about handling and storage and everything is based on that density. I mean, that, you know, the, so we had to go somewhere. But everything we're hearing about today is significantly below that number. So, at least domestically. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a rather fun. All those conversions were a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, let's thank our panel members and our speakers this morning.